With so many religions in the world today, how can we know which, if any, is true? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for June is Religion on Trial, Examining Religious Truth Claims. It's written by regular guest Craig Parton. Learn more about Religion on Trial at IssuesETC.org or call Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Religion on Trial by Craig Parton. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Well, it always is going to get media attention when Baptists gather for the Southern Baptist Convention, as they are even this day in Dallas and yesterday. This one came with a little more scrutiny from the media, not just a routine event with journalism to say, okay, the Southern Baptist Convention is meeting, what do we need to learn here? This one came with a run-up of controversy involving Paige Patterson and the Me Too movement, some questions about who might be the next president and what that might symbolically indicate for the Southern Baptist, a shift in emphasis or maybe a change of mind when it comes to women, to all of the things the Southern Baptists have been so roundly criticized for, sadly, in American society. Joining us to talk about media coverage of the annual meeting of the Southern Baptist Convention, Terry Mattingly. He's Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be here.
When reporters cover the Southern Baptist Convention, especially this one this summer, what's the one thing they probably should have learned about Baptists and politics?
Well, first of all, Baptists are not going to discuss anything in the context of politics first. I'm sure, having watched it during the years when I was an active religion reporter and was covering the convention, it's amazing to watch a room full of reporters from New York and Washington kind of face this wall of overwhelming evangelical and Baptist language about evangelism and soul winning and heaven and hell and whatever. And there's a degree to which that's a stylistic thing, it's a cultural thing. But the reality is, in the end, the Southern Baptists are going to care a great deal about whether or not churches are thriving and growing, whether they're baptizing people, and that is sincere. That is a totally sincere piece of the Southern Baptist DNA. So what does that have to do with politics? After listening to quite a few of the proceedings at this year's convention and a lot of them at last year's, I think we continue to see that one of the most important trends in Southern Baptist life is the growth of churches that are either African-American or Latino. And I think what we saw this year was more evidence that younger Southern Baptist leaders believe that they shouldn't be so nakedly partisan when it comes to politics that they, quite frankly, leave their Black and Latino and Asian Southern Baptist out to dry. They really shouldn't do things that are horrifying politically in the context of African-American communities and urban communities and other places that Southern Baptists would like their churches to succeed. Now, it's very important for reporters to understand that when it comes to doctrine, and when it comes to morality and culture, there are not a lot of fault lines left in the Southern Baptist Convention. The Southern Baptist Civil War of the late 70s and early 80s cleared a lot of those out. And anybody who listened to the presentations by the seminary presidents this year certainly could see that. So this is a very conservative bunch of people. But there are very real differences between the young Southern Baptist conservatives might I say, the female Southern Baptist conservatives, and this kind of old guard that came of age right after Roe v. Wade, right after they were courted so fiercely by Ronald Reagan. And we're now decades down the pipe, and those people are having a lot of second thoughts and deeper thoughts about how they express themselves culturally and politically. There's a piece that ran in the Washington Post about some of this, where they got their hands on a real live Southern Baptist historian from Baylor, someone that I've known for years and I think highly of, Thomas Kidd. And you ended up with a phrase making it into the Washington Post coverage that really, stop and think about it for a second. Let me see if I can find this. This convention was wrestling with the first real tension over a GOP speaker since the late evangelist Billy Graham pushed for the invitation of Richard Nixon in 1972. And this reveals a significant upheaval among conservative evangelicals about Trump and the mixing of partisan politics and religion. Now, did you listen to that carefully? This reveals a significant upheaval among conservative evangelicals about Trump. If I isolate that phrase, does that strike you as rather different from headlines in the last year or two?
Yes.
This complexity about the Trump era has been there all along, but we've been so busy focusing on it purely through the lens of the 81% of white evangelicals who voted for Trump, half of them because they really wanted to, half of them because they felt they had no other option. But all of a sudden, some of these tensions, even among people who voted for Trump, these tensions are still there. They have strong feelings about various aspects of Trump's life and his personal behavior. And, oh yes, by the way, immigration, a powerful issue when it comes to Latino Southern Baptist. And how about how Trump has a history with women, a major issue there with a lot of female conservative Southern Baptist, and so forth and so on. There's a direct quote from Thomas Kidd. For 35 years, you could expect the Southern Baptist Convention to be pro-Republican in a nearly unanimous way. But 2016 means the relationship with the Republican Party for the Southern Baptist Convention has become problematic. Now, what we saw on the floor was someone lighting a fuse on a discussion that I'm sure will continue in future SBCs. When it became known that Vice President Mike Pence was going to address the convention, there immediately were people who said they were concerned about this, that this presented some sort of co-optation of the convention for a Republican White House PR event. Well, then we saw, during the open business times, speaker after speaker hit the mic. Some of them specifically said, can we cancel Pence's address and just have an hour of prayer? That was one resolution. And then there were others that simply said, can we create a policy for the Southern Baptist Convention in which we invite no active politicians to address the convention, other than maybe the mayor of the host city bringing greetings? Now, that's actually a throwback, a multiple, many-decade throwback to how Southern Baptists would have related to politics in the past. And I guarantee you, among the young Southern Baptists, this debate is just getting started.
More on the media coverage of the annual meeting of the Southern Baptist Convention with Terry Mattingly right after the break.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about media coverage of the annual meeting of the Southern Baptist Convention. Terry Mattingly is our guest, Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, another thing you wanted to point out, and this is, while it seems just kind of a matter of protocol or polity, it really is very important for understanding what is happening and what it means in Dallas as the Southern Baptist Convention meets. And that has to do with the fact that many reporters are going to assume as they cover this that this is a denomination, that the Southern Baptist Convention is a denomination in the ordinary sense. How would you correct that misperception?
Well, this reality of Baptist polity has a lot of side effects that I'm not sure Southern Baptists understand. So give me a second and I'll give you a really practical application of this polity. First of all, the Southern Baptist, both in reality and in mythology, is a convention of very freewheeling and independent local congregations. Now, in the last 25 years, you've begun to see some signs of almost a kind of Presbyterian polity at the local and regional level, where perhaps churches that ordain women as pastors are not welcome in some local associations. We've seen cases where churches that affirm gay rights and perhaps are willing to hold same-sex union ceremonies, they're suddenly not as welcome among local associations and maybe state associations, and thus that challenges their ability to participate at the national level. So a lot of people would say there are signs that Baptists aren't quite as free as they think they are, but the simple fact of the matter is the convention exists as an entity once a year for 2 days when messengers representing local churches, up to 10 per church, and a small church gets 10, a 25,000-member megachurch gets 10. This is not some sort of formal structure the way you see among United Methodists, Presbyterians, Episcopalians, and others, where you have delegates who are elected through a method run by the denominational structure itself, and they meet as a legislative body to approve the actions of their denomination. I think that's what reporters are used to covering. And that national structure is legal, it's formal, it's authoritative, and in some ways, these are organizations in which there's more power at the top. Now, Baptists have an executive committee, and the executive committee can take certain actions that are granted it by the National Convention. We also have boards of trustees in Southern Baptist life that can take actions within their individual areas of power. The trustees of a seminary can vote to dismiss a Paige Patterson, but then they're going to have to answer to the National Convention, which ultimately will pick a president, and that president will pick a committee on committees, and that committee on committees will name the people who name their trustees. So there is a structure there, but it's very important to realize that it is not a formal denominational structure the way Methodist, Presbyterians, Episcopalians, and others are. Reporters always fall for this. Young reporters who go to the meetings, and the next thing they're writing stories about the Southern Baptist delegates have voted for their church to do so-and-so. Well, no. What you heard was messengers sent from local congregations, not from a further denominational structure at the association or state level. And in most cases, what these messengers do is pass resolutions urging Baptist agencies to do the following. There's a big difference between a resolution urging it and the trustees of those different agencies and institutions formally voting with the power they've been given by the convention. That was really complicated, but does that make sense?
So, not a denomination in the conventional sense, in that in the Baptist mind, the authority lies, this group that gathered there in Dallas has far less authority than the congregations individually do in the minds of Southern Baptists.
Correct. Except that convention picks the leaders who then name the trustees. So that's how the power functions.
In that vein, there was a leader chosen yesterday, I believe, by the Southern Baptist Convention. Not unexpected. He had been in ballots before.
In a very close election before, yeah.
And he kind of swept this one in with a pretty healthy majority in a single ballot. He's also the youngest of the Southern Baptist Convention presidents, J.D. Greer. What do we know about this man?
Well, he's a very successful mega church style pastor in the modern style. Now, from what I understand, his preaching is a lot more conventional than a lot of people. It's also interesting for those who follow Baptist politics that he's kind of a bridge figure between the denomination's Calvinist and Arminian free will wings. We're in a period right now where the young, powerful Baptists are almost all coming out of networks of young Calvinists. A lot of them are attached to the public intellectual Al Mohler of Southern Seminary in Louisville. That's where the action has been for a while. This guy represents a kind of stance that is largely acceptable to both of them. Now, you did see eyebrows raise because this man's church, his mega congregation, does not have the name Baptist in its title. And that's a trend that we've seen more and more often. And it, in some ways, it makes him look more like a normal megachurch, evangelical, generic pastor. But at the same time, you know, there's that huge church out in California, outside of L.A., with a certain purpose-driven pastor that doesn't have Baptist in the name either. So this has been around, so it's not that controversial. But he's definitely a stylistic change, and he definitely represents the younger Baptists who are anxious to have a less partisan political stance.
What does that mean, a less partisan political stance? Does it simply mean he's not an overt Trump supporter or something along those lines?
Well, it's really interesting. I haven't been able for the last couple of hours to keep watching the convention. I'll tune in a little bit more later when the Ethics and Religious Life Commission does its report with Russell Moore speaking and taking questions from a sometimes hostile crowd of Trump supporters. It'll be interesting to see if there's any more debate at that time. But I'm talking about politics that focuses more on the actual moral and cultural issues in ways that may build coalitions among African Americans, Latinos, and others, as opposed to ending up in the White House with your hands on top of Trump's head, blessing him. Gestures, of which some of the older Southern Baptist leadership has been known to do. So whatever political action is taken, expect more focus on issues and less on public endorsements and embracing people. So Pence spoke today on Wednesday as we record this. Pence spoke today, and this was exactly the speech that the young Baptist feared, in my perspective. Everything was linked to Trump. Pence could have come in and have given a barn burner of a speech on religious liberty, the need to treat women with respect, and a whole lot of other issues like that. But if he had done that without talking about Trump a lot, the headlines would have said, maybe Pence distances himself from Trump. Maybe even Pence begins his first run for the White House in terms of building Southern Baptist support. I could picture a lot of different headlines if he had done that. So instead, he came in and basically did a Trump White House stump speech. And boy, I would have loved to have been walking around in the hallways afterwards and have heard what a lot of young Southern Baptists had to say. In some ways, that was exactly the scene that they feared.
Okay, so I got a couple other questions here. You had mentioned Russell Moore. There was actually an attempt on the part of, and I don't know who it was at the Southern Baptist Convention, to defund the Ethics, Religious, and Liberty Commission that he heads. Was that just further, blowback from his failure to support Donald Trump?
And that's not the first time we've seen this. Don't forget, the Southern Baptists do have a period of time when there's an open mic, and those messengers can get up there and say pretty much whatever they want, and they have been known to do so. That's why I say it'll be important when Russell Moore actually faces the floor during the Q&A section after his own report on his agency and its work. I didn't think that was a very serious effort, and a crucial moment was when Richard Land, the previous leader of the ELRC and very much one of the heroes of the old guard right, he walked to a microphone and defended the agency and defended its actions and defended its approach. And I can't remember if he defended Russell Moore by name, but it was certainly implied, let's leave these guys alone and let them do their work. And that was coming from one of the lions of the old guard.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about media coverage of the annual meeting of the Southern Baptist Convention. When we come back, some suggestions, perhaps, that even Beth Moore, famous speaker and writer, might be president of the Southern Baptist Convention in the future. Stay tuned.
What does it mean to be a man? More importantly, what does it mean to be a man of God? In its June issue, the Lutheran Witness aims to help readers dig more deeply into the Bible's vision of men set free. Free to be loving husbands, caring fathers, bold proclaimers of the gospel, and self-sacrificial images of Jesus Christ. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the language of medicine and law today. Visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The Church's Music from the 20th Century. The 17th century. Jesus has come and brings pleasure eternal. The 11th century. The 8th century. The 4th century. The best of the Church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin on this Wednesday, June the 13th. We're talking about media coverage of the annual meeting of the Southern Baptist Convention going on as we speak. Terry Mattingly is our guest, author of the On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate. Terry, one of the things leading up to the convention was some speculation about who would be president. We'll talk about the president in just a little bit, but one of the names that was mentioned there was Beth Moore, of all people. Beth Moore is a Southern Baptist. She's also a very popular writer and speaker. I would call her an evangelist in women's ministries, probably. And before the convention, Jonathan Merritt had suggested that she might make a good president in this Me Too era for the Southern Baptist Convention. And then at the convention itself, James Merritt, his father, said that he did not believe there's any biblical reason why she couldn't serve as president of the Southern Baptist Convention.
Yeah, you saw some people try to bring that up in ways to create heat and fire. That's going to get discussed a lot behind the scenes. If there is an effort to run her for the presidency, first of all, what normally happens is you run for the first vice presidency, and then you're moved up, or you're put kind of into a point of being nominated. That's kind of an old tradition. That's not necessarily what happened this time. So there are things that she would, her supporters would need to do. It could just be a pure grassroots. But what I think is important is the degree to which this entire convention was shaped by a stress that the Southern Baptists need to get their legal and moral act together when it comes to dealing with victims of abuse. And this brings me back to something I said earlier. I said I was going to give you a practical example of how polity affects things like this. You heard seminary after seminary emphasize that this is something they're taking very seriously. They are working with women in their campuses. Several of them stressed, we may not have women teaching theology because our bylaws require theology professors to be eligible to be ordained Southern Baptist ministers. So you heard that, but we have tons of women in other top administrative positions to the assistant vice president level, et cetera, et cetera. You had a lot of language about that. I kept listening carefully because some people have recommended that the convention, that the SBC itself create some sort of formal clearinghouse where ministers and potential ministers who have been accused of abuse, their names and their records could be stored to help protect other Southern Baptist churches from hiring someone with a record that they don't know about. Now, let me stress, that's all about this issue of there being no formal denomination. A denomination that exists around the clock, year-round, with formal authority and, might I add, insurance policies and a bunch of other stuff, they can run a registry like that and take responsibility for doing it. Now, what happens if the Southern Baptists create a registry of that kind and they miss somebody? And some church out there hires a guy who they didn't know had a past record. This guy abuses some people, and then the people he abuses find out his name was not in the registry, and they sue the Southern Baptist Convention for failing to catch him. Where under Baptist polity right now, they could sue the local church, perhaps, for damages. But there wouldn't be a legal responsibility that would go all the way to the national level. Do you get my difference there?
Yes.
This is a side effect of this polity issue. Southern Baptists create agencies and maybe even institutions like seminaries, and those individual institutions and schools, etc., have their own legal standing and well-being, and their trustees are linked to this creation system through the convention. But in terms of creating a legal, formal, insured financial structure that lawyers can target, the Southern Baptist Convention wants to stress it is a convention, not a denomination. Now, I would love to see that registry come to pass. I wish there was some way that such a registry could be for the entire chaotic world of independent evangelical, independent Baptist, and independent charismatic churches, where there are all kinds of abuses that take place, and there's no way for the next church to know. There's no there when it comes to keeping track of these issues and keeping track of these charges and even keeping track of convictions. That's one place where Baptists' hive of bees or dancing army of squirrels or whatever image you want to use for its sometimes chaotic polity, that's a place where it sometimes becomes hard to do something good because of the way you're actually structured. Reporters need to understand that that's one of the things affecting this women's issue when it comes to really trying to put some teeth into these resolutions to do better.
One final question, kind of on the future, bringing these things together, Me Too, but the prominent presence of Beth Moore there and the support that some were at least kind of positing, floating a trial balloon. I wonder, since the Southern Baptist Convention had in the past ordained women, perhaps not to lead pastor roles, but to pastoral roles, and then rolled that back. I believe it's the only denomination to have ever done that in the United States.
You're calling it a denomination.
I'm sorry. It's the only.
There were individual churches that ordained women, and there were regional associations that allowed those churches to continue membership in the association. But you can't say that Southern Baptists as a body embraced the ordination of women. Now, the big issue has always been, what about missionaries? Do we accept ordained women as missionaries, either national or local? How about hospital chaplains, etc.? And once again, watch the seminaries closely. This is where a lot of these issues will come up again and again and be debated. Each of the seminary presidents mentioned that the percentage of women studying on their campuses is growing. The issue of what constitutes effective and approved female leadership is going to come up again and again and again and again and again. But be careful how you address that. Because yes, the Southern Baptists, as a part of the swing back to the doctrinal right, moved further from women's ordination. But that women's ordination that was occurring locally and regionally. It's crucial to understand that.
Will then the Me Too movement spark some impetus to bring the issue of women's ordination back to the forefront of the Southern Baptist Convention?
Well, they can try. But if you listened to carefully to what women were saying at this convention, I don't think that's going to get anywhere near the floor of the National Convention. And by the way, in an era when seminaries around the country are having all kinds of trouble getting MDiv students and keeping their doors open and their budgets balanced, the Southern Baptist seminaries, especially the big ones like Southern and Louisville, are growing. So I don't think you're going to see a lot of powerful pressure for them to loosen up their doctrinal stance.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, talk with you next week.
You bet. See you then.
When we come back, we'll go through some listener email and respond to it and respond to your comments from the Issues Etc. comment line.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Tired of hearing about what you have to do for God? Then come hear what He has done for you. Receive His gifts of life and salvation through the cross of Jesus Christ. If you think big screens belong in movie theaters, then you'll be right at home at Faith Lutheran Church in Beaufort, South Carolina. God's powerful saving word needs no gimmicks, so we simply teach the Word of God and administer His sacraments. We plant and water while God gives the growth. Faith Lutheran Church of Beaufort, South Carolina, where the Bible is still the Word of God and where we still speak the historic Christian liturgy. This is your grandfather's church. Come home.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth. Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.
Thanks to generous supporters, tuition for all incoming residential pastoral ministry and deaconess students at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, will be paid in full. Hi, this is Dr. Lawrence Rast, president of Concordia Theological Seminary. Learn more about studying for the vocations of pastor or deaconess in the 2018-19 academic year at ctsfw.edu.
Solid, serious, substantive. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Are you tired of working out at big box gyms? You'll find quality personal training and qualified instruction at Performance Fitness in Edwardsville. You can even work out for a full 30 days before making a commitment to join. Find out more at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. Performancefitness618.com.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran learning. Issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.